I'm Mike, and you are listening to the Hardtack Military History Podcast. Hardtack is a military history podcast and contains mature themes, content, and some crude language. Listener discretion is advised. The opinions and analysis expressed are that of the producer. Now, put on your Kevlar. Secure your Lickies and Chewies, and prepare to take cover for this episode of Hardtack. All right, hello and welcome to Hardtack episode 33. It's good to be back with another episode, and I appreciate everyone that has stuck around through our very sporadic breaks and recording. I also want to give a shout out to the new listeners. I see all of you that have subscribed since our last episode, and I want to thank you for joining. A couple of housekeeping items before we really get into this episode. First, don't forget to check out the Hardtack socials found via our link tree. It's all listed in the episode description, or you can search Hardtack on Instagram or Facebook. You can also visit the website and leave a comment on hardtackpod.com. Also, don't forget to drop a review and comment as well as rate. All of those things help boost our visibility on Spotify, as well as Apple or whatever platform you use to consume your Hardtack. We also have a Patreon. Not doing a whole lot with that, but if you want to contribute to our production, that would be a huge help. So please take a look at the Patreon and feel free to contribute, whether it's a one-time or a continued subscription. All right. So for this episode, we're going to begin by first getting into a little bit of history. Shortly after Japan launched its surprise attack on Naval Station Pearl Harbor on December 7th, 1941, President Roosevelt signed Executive Order 9066, which resulted in over 100,000 West Coast citizens and residents of Japanese descent into incarceration camps here in the United States. Racism against Japanese Americans rapidly increased as distrust ballooned. What many Americans failed to realize was that Japanese Americans were also inflamed at the attack on Pearl Harbor. After all, they were also American. Answering their nation's call, while many in the nation expressed prejudice against them, Japanese Americans chose to serve. And on February 1st, 1943, President Roosevelt activated the 442nd Regimental Combat Team, a segregated army unit composed of Japanese Americans from Hawaii and the mainland United States that fought in World War II. And their motto was "Go for Broke." For high-rolling gamblers in Hawaii in the 1940s, "Go for Broke" was slang for shooting the works or risking everything for the big win. For the Nisei soldiers, "go for broke" meant that they would put everything on the line and win the war against the Germans in Europe and the war against racial prejudice at home in their own country. The 442nd's actions distinguished them as the most decorated unit for both its size and length of service in the history of the United States military. We're talking all the way back from 1775 with the founding of the United States Army until when they were first established by President Roosevelt in 1943. It's a lot of history. The unit totaled about 18,000 men who earned the unit over 4,000 Purple Hearts, 4,000 Bronze Stars, 560 Silver Star Medals, and 21 Medals of Honor. Again, this is one unit. 7 Presidential Unit Citations were also awarded to the 442nd. Today, the unit is remembered and celebrated through the Go for Broke National Education Center. This is an organization founded in 1989, and its mission is to educate and inspire character and equality through the virtue and valor of World War II American veterans of Japanese ancestry. Here to talk with us today about the 442nd and the Go for Broke National Education Center is its president and CEO, Dr. Mitchell T. Maki. Dr. Maki, welcome to Hardtack, and thank you so much for being here today.
Michael, thank you for having me, and thank you for that great introduction. I think you really covered all the high points for the 100th 442nd, so thank you for that.
Absolutely. So Before we get into Go for Broke, before we get into the 442nd and really the 100th and 442nd, their contributions in World War II, I have to highlight my guest. So I want you to begin by, please just tell us a bit about yourself. And let's begin with your heritage, your upbringing, and your passion.
Okay. Well, I'm Japanese American, and in our community, I'm what's known as a sansei, a third generation. And the way Japanese Americans and most Asian Americans count generations is that the first group to come, the immigrant generation, is considered the first generation, the Issei. The first American-born generation is considered the second generation, and that's the Nisei. So my grandparents came to Hawaii around the 1900s. They settled down, they had roots. My parents were born in the mid-1920s, and they were known as the Nisei, the first generation born here in America. And so they were in Hawaii during World War II. They were both teenagers when the war broke out. And then after they got married and in the mid-50s, they moved to California, to Los Angeles. And that's where I was born and raised. So I'm a native Angeleno and entire life in California, in the Los Angeles area.
All right. So growing up in California, a lot of culture there. Used to live in California myself. Let's start with upbringing, basically your education, because where you are now with Go for Broke versus where you came from, there's some connection, but there's also a trail that you took to get there. So Where did you begin with schooling, college, education?
Well, you know, I grew up in Los Angeles. My parents sent me to a combination of private and public schools. I then went on to college at the University of Southern California. And that's where I took my first Japanese American history class. You know, even though I'm Japanese American and I grew up Japanese American, there's so much about one's own community that sometimes you don't learn. And I remember as a child first learning about the incarceration of World War II and thinking, you know, that can't be people like me and my mom and dad. You know, they must have been like Japanese from Japan or something like that.
Right.
And then to come find out that, no, it was people like my mother, like my father, who had been born in America, like my grandparents, who had been living here 40, 50 years by the time World War II had broken out. The only difference was they were on the continental United States rather than being in Hawaii. And Michael, I can't tell you what that meant to me as a 10-year-old boy to realize, what, this happened in my country? The people who look like me, who, it just didn't register. It really blew my mind to use that phrase, because I had always seen myself as an American. You know, the Star Spangled Banner, God Bless America. This was my country. I had no connection to Japan. And so as a 10-year-old, I thought, how could this be, right? Yeah. And then I learned also, very shortly thereafter, about the 100th 442nd and what these young men and then subsequently women did to serve our nation, even though this terrible travesty of justice had occurred. And that filled me with such great pride, you know, just think that people, and I found out later that my uncle was one of those who served in Company E, stood up despite the fact that we were being treated as second-class citizens and on the continental United States being completely deprived of our constitutional rights.
Right.
So when I went to college, I took that class, and that began a lifelong journey of exploration and study and research. I would go on to get my doctorate in social work, and then become a professor at the other university, big university in LA, at UCLA. And there I had the good fortune of working with a senior professor in writing a book called Achieving the Impossible Dream. And the book is a case study of the Japanese American experience, starting from Pearl Harbor all the way to the passage of the Civil Liberties Act of 1988, when Japanese Americans received a presidential apology and monetary reparations. But critical to that story is the role of the 100th 442nd and how during World War II, they demonstrated the loyalty and the courage and the service of the Japanese American community. And really, they demonstrated the wisdom of America's promise. And that's the promise that in our nation, no one is to be judged by the color of their skin, the nation of their origin, or the faith they choose to keep. Now, these were the sons of immigrants who in one generation said, America is my land. America is my home.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah. And I looked at Achieving the Impossible Dream. So you also had several co-authors on Achieving the Impossible Dream. So can you just speak a little bit about them and what your goal was as a group and writing this book?
So there were three of us, and the senior professor was just a wonderful man named Harry Kitano. And he was a pioneer in Asian American studies and somebody who was just very well known in that field of study. And so he lived through World War II. He knew many of the people who went through camp. And, you know, he knew many of the veterans. He was a little bit young himself to serve in the 104-42nd, but certainly people from his community and from the camp that in which he was incarcerated went off to war. So he was a firsthand narrative, if you will, of what occurred. I, as I mentioned earlier, am third generation, so born well after the war, seeing it through the eyes of a much younger Japanese American. And our third author was a young woman named Megan Berthold. And Megan was a white American woman from New England and, quite frankly, knew very little about this experience when she first started in the process of helping us to write the book. But what she brought with her was fresh eyes and fresh questions and saying, how could this happen in our nation? And we just worked so well together in bringing three different perspectives in hopefully bringing a 360 view to the whole experience during World War II and in the decades after.
That's awesome. Okay. All right. And then from, so you said you mastered in social work or doctorate
in social work and then a doctorate degree.
Doctorate in social work. So first off, thank you for that, because I know how hard, as a behavioral health professional myself, I know how hard, social work can be. Right. So that's great. But then you ended up becoming a part of the Go for Broke National Education Center. So before we even get into how you got involved in that, what is the Go for Broke National Education Center?
So the Go for Broke National Education Center, as you mentioned, was founded in 1989. Mm-hmm. And it was founded primarily by many of the veterans who fought during World War II. And they were now in their 60s and 70s, and some even in their 80s at that particular time. And they wanted to make sure that the legacy of what they had done, both in Europe and also in the Pacific, because there's a whole nother story of how the Japanese American soldiers served in the Pacific Theater and helped to end the war against Japan years earlier than otherwise would have happened. We'll save that for another podcast, but clearly the Japanese Americans served both in Europe as well as in the Pacific Theater.
Right.
So these soldiers wanted to make sure, these veterans wanted to make sure that their legacy, their American legacy, was not forgotten and would stand the test of time to continue to be told well after they had left us.
I think it's really important to highlight, you say these Japanese soldiers, but these Japanese and then American soldiers. Yeah. And they felt that way about themselves, that they were American soldiers.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So,
clearly, and if I can expound on that, because that point
please.
Is important. When World War II broke out, whether they were in Hawaii or whether they were on the mainland, There was no question in the minds of these young men who they were. They knew they were Americans. I mean, you know, they may have spoken Japanese at home with their parents who were that first generation. They may have eaten Japanese food when they were at home with family. But then they go to school and they speak English and they listen to American music and they read American books and they eat American food. So there was clearly no conflict in their mind about who they were. In Hawaii, even more so, they saw the attack. Many of them saw the attack on Pearl Harbor. They heard the planes flying in. They heard the explosions. They felt the vibration. And they, more important, they knew some of the people who were injured or killed at Pearl Harbor. This wasn't an abstract war for them. This was an attack on their backyard. And so for many of the Japanese American soldiers, certainly all the American soldiers who came out of Hawaii, but also for the Japanese American soldiers, this was personal.
Right.
This was their backyard. For those on the continental United States, many of them had never even heard of Pearl Harbor, you know, this place in the middle of the Pacific and so forth. But clearly, you know, despite the fact that they were being incarcerated, despite the fact that they lost their homes, their jobs, their family farms, but most of all, what they felt that they had lost at times was their place at the American table of citizenship. Right. In their mind, they knew who they were as Americans. You know? So that was never a part of the question. The real conflict was, could you serve this nation? Could you serve America after what it had done to your family, you know, taken everything away? And for many of the families, they were, of course, imprisoned in the middle of a desert. They had lost everything. And for many of the families, there was this concern of let's keep the family together. You know, that's all we have left, right? And so there was some sentiment that, you know, let's stay together. Let's not abandon our parents. And let's take care of what little we have left. But for the vast majority of the young Japanese American soldiers, they knew who they were. And the feeling was, we aren't trusted as it is. We're seen as the enemy. Right. If we don't go and fight, if we don't go and prove our loyalty, we'll be just proving that perspective as correct, as the truth. They understood that they were fighting for the futures of those that they loved, but also fighting for the futures of those they would never know, and that they were, right or wrong, you know, paving the way for a better America for all of us.
To hold that mindset, I can't imagine, especially here we are in 2024, but reading the history of the 100th and the 442nd and these Nisei soldiers, and then it's a lot to process, to be despised, to be hated, to be untrusted, but then to be willing to make the ultimate sacrifice, because that's what it was.
Right. And for over 800 of them, they did make the ultimate sacrifice.
Right. So Go for Broke starts off late 1980s. What does the evolution look like? How does it gain momentum?
Well, certainly we want to continue to tell the story and keep the legacy alive of what these men and women did in the 1940s. But you know, part of the challenge, Michael, is that not everyone wants to hear war stories. Not everyone wants to take inspiration from this. And quite frankly, I see it, and our organization sees this as being so much more than just a military story. You know, certainly that's a big aspect of it, and certainly we want to keep that part alive, right? But it really is the story of going all in for something you believe in. It's really the story of the strength of America to take people from around the world, and in one generation, they become American. Right. And I think what our young folks can take inspiration from right now is that if these men and women could do this in 1942, we can still do this in 2024 and address the issues that are facing our nation and address the issues that challenge our nation and to continue to make America that more perfect union. You know, and unfortunately, I think you would agree and your viewers would agree, we hear so much conflict in the news.
Yeah.
We hear only in the form of sound bites, right? The left says this, the right says that, and, you know, a bunch of finger pointing.
Yeah.
I cling to the belief that most Americans still are somewhere in the middle. You know, that somewhere we all still believe in the dignity of the individual, the dignity of freedom and liberty and equality, and that all of us deserve a chance to work hard and have America live up to its promise. You know, and together we share that common ground. And so I think the inspiration of this Go for Broke story, along with the military aspect of it, though, becomes a societal aspect that we all have a role to play in keeping our country as great as it is.
Well, I think you really hit on an important point there, and I don't disagree. You know, this last week, most of my listeners know, and you're aware that I'm active duty military, and I just spent the last week in Fort Belvoir, Virginia, where I attended a medical conference. Being a behavioral health professional in the United States Army, one of our big concerns moving forward is how we're going to deliver mental health and future wars. And everything's switched from COIN or counterinsurgency, and now we're looking at what we call LISCO, large scale combat operations, and how we deliver care to individuals, forward lines, and a battlefield that mirrors World War II.
Yes.
And that's going to be difficult. And one of the biggest things that we're facing is the youth of today and the current the current ideology in America. Not everything's so pro-military. It's great to support the troops, right? But becoming one of them is becoming more and more difficult. So we're very divided. I think you're right. We're polarized, at least in the media. And that's what I wanted to get at, is the media states that we're so polarized. But if you have a conversation with your everyday American, door to door, it's a very different conversation than what is being put out through CNN, MSN, Fox News, CNBC, or any of your other media outlets. It's so different.
And, you know, I think that becomes the key to how we reunite, if you will, our nation is through conversation and through finding that common ground and realizing that, as I mentioned earlier, I do believe the majority of us are still somewhere in the middle where we have more in common than we do differences.
You know? I agree. And
I realize there's a lot going on in the nation. I realize there's a lot of division around different issues and so forth. But there's always been that division on particular issues.
You know, right.
I think, again, we need to continue to talk, continue to have discussions in order to affirm that common ground that we have as Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. And talking about divisive issues, your background here is a monument. Monuments have been a topic of discussion for the past several years, but this monument is very different. So I want to highlight your background, but also expand for the listeners, what is the Go for Broke monument? What does it represent? When was it built? And what is your personal attachment to it? Because I know it runs deep.
So the monument, it was built in 1999. So it is now 25 years old. It sits in the little Tokyo district of downtown Los Angeles. And literally up until this year, it sat alone in the middle of a parking lot. And let me first describe the monument.
Wow.
The parking lot aspect of it. It's a black kind of sloped monument, and it's supposed to represent the mountainside of northern France in the Vosges Mountains.
Okay.
And that's where the famous battle of the rescue of the Lost Battalion took place. And we can talk about that in a minute, where a Japanese-American unit, the 142nd, rescued 211 white American Texans who had been surrounded by Nazi troops. And in the process, however, they took over 300 casualties.
Hmm.
So the slope of the monument is to represent the slope of the mountains in northern France. On the monument are over 16,000 names of the young men and women, and including non-Japanese Americans, who were, some of them were the officers who served in the 100th 442nd. As I mentioned, the monument has sat in the middle of a parking lot since 1999. Literally, this year in February, we broke ground on a 330,000 square foot building that is now going to embrace this monument. It's going to take up the whole city block. It'll be five stories tall. It will be a new home for Go for Broke National Education Center. We'll have about 10,000 square feet in there. There will also be legacy restaurants that have been in Little Tokyo for over 100 years and other businesses. And we will have 248 units of affordable housing to address the housing crisis, the affordable housing crisis in downtown Los Angeles. So it is a private-public nonprofit partnership that addresses the needs of the Little Tokyo area, the needs of the city of Los Angeles, and also the nonprofit needs of our organization to continue to grow and have a permanent space in Los Angeles. And in doing so, I like to think that our veterans continue to give back to our nation, and in this case, to our city, as we are addressing the housing issue in Los Angeles.
That's absolutely amazing, because here we have a unit that was a segregated unit that was shunned in many instances. And here we are, 2024, almost 80 years later, and they're still finding ways to give back to the American community.
Yes. Well said. Well said, Michael.
It's amazing.
I'll give you one other example. Is that in November of last year, November of 2023, so again, 80 years after the end of the war, right, the city of Glendale, California, which is about 10 miles north of Los Angeles, named a major intersection after one of the soldiers. His name was Sadao Munemori, and he was the first Japanese-American soldier during World War II to be awarded the Medal of Honor for his heroics during World War II. Near the end of the war in Italy, they were attempting to take a city. And as the firefight was going on, Sadao ran back to his foxhole, dove in, and as he dove in, a hand grenade hit him on the top of his helmet. The hand grenade then rolled in front of two of his fellow soldiers. And what did Sadao do? He immediately threw himself on the hand grenade, taking the explosion, giving his life, but in the process saving his two fellow soldiers. For that, he was awarded the Medal of Honor during World War II. And as you mentioned, 80 years after, we're still acknowledging that courage. We're still acknowledging that service. And because Sadao was originally from Glendale,
right,
that city block, that city intersection after him.
That's amazing. Yeah, and I saw, so he must have been a part of the 100th 442nd.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he was one of the 21 Medal of Honors that were awarded.
Correct.
To the
In
unit.
Fact, he was the only one who received the Medal of Honor during the World War II period. It happened in the late 1990s. There was legislation to re-examine the medals that had been awarded to Japanese Americans. And so they looked at all those that had received the Distinguished Service Cross, the sure. second highest medal.
Right.
And because there was a feeling that these soldiers had done things that normally would have deserved the Medal of Honor, but because of the racism of the time, they only received the Distinguished Service Cross.
Right.
So sure enough, in the late 1990s and then in 2000, President Clinton awarded 20 more Medals of Honor, some of them posthumously, to the other recipients.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and cut the episode here. This turned out to be quite a lengthy one, so we're going to take our interview with Dr. Mitch Maki and cut it into two episodes, bringing us now to the end of Hard Tack, episode 33. Between now and the next episode, take some time to look into Go for Broke and the Go for Broke National Education Center, as well as the monument, the history of the 100th 442nd, and really look into the Nisei linguist and all of those individuals that this special segregated unit that did so much for our country, yet weren't accepted as really a part of that country until many years later. I'll have all the links in the show notes. Tune in next week for Hard Tack episode 34, where we will again meet with Dr. Maki for part two of our interview about the Go for Broke National Education Center and the 100th 442nd. Please don't forget to leave a review and subscribe on whichever platform you use to consume your Hard Tack. Thank you for your support. Thank you for listening. And remember to keep your Hard Tack dry.